This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode, which is part three of my Week at the Magic Castle, is brought to you again by the Friends of the Magic Word. That is, those people who have participated and helped support us financially by offering some money, either on a one-time basis or on a regular, ongoing monthly basis, and you can do that easily through patreon.com. I also want to welcome the newest member of the Friends of the Magic Word, and that is Phil Goodman. Thanks a lot, Phil, and welcome to the group. We certainly appreciate your support. And anyone else who would like to find out more information how you could become a Friend of the Magic Word and help support our efforts and help to pay for the many things that we have as far as microphones and laptop and everything else that we have to use in order to produce this podcast week after week, plus the domain provider, the server, and everything else, not to mention my time, which for each hour of this podcast, it probably takes another 6 hours to kind of put this all together, and that's not really an exaggeration. So anyhow, if you have the means and it's available to you to go to then over to themagicwordpodcast.com and click on the little link over there that says Become a Friend of the Magic Word, and you can watch a short video. I'll tell you a little bit about that. Enough of that. This week, again, is part three of my Week at the Magic Castle, and this is going to be just a little bit shorter and a little bit different from what we have had in the past. In fact, we go outside the Magic Castle. Martin Cox and I drove over to Santa Monica to visit with Steve Spill. Now, Steve Spill is the proprietor and owner and resident and magician, I should say, magician in residence at Magicopolis. If you have an opportunity to go to Santa Monica, highly recommend you go and see his show. It's about, I think he said, a two-hour show, and it's for more information on this, I do recommend that you go to our website at themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you will see a video tour that he gives us of the Magicopolis. And so I think that's kind of fascinating, and so thank you, Steve. And so anyhow, we, that is, Martin and I got to visit with him a little bit, and then we went over and had lunch, and then that later in the day, being Magic and Martini Thursday, we went to one of the oldest, well, perhaps not one of, but the oldest restaurant in Hollywood, built and opened in 1919, called Musso and Frank's. And this was a really cool old Hollywood kind of a place. And so we have an opportunity to sit and have a martini and chat with the fellow who is a bartender there, Ruben, who's been there for like 50 years. And another guy, Sonny Bones, is another one of the waiters, and then also the general manager. And so that's a little bit different to kind of give you a little bit of color and background of the Hollywood scene, particularly the old Hollywood scene. After that, we're going to go into just a few product reviews from those products available from Murphy's Magic Supplies. So there's a lot packed into this episode, and I hope you enjoy part three of my week at the Magic Castle here on The Magic Word. All right, Scott Wells from MagicWordPodcast.com. We were at the Magicopolis and just had a video tour, so you're going to have to look at that on the blog.
And the magic trick.
And the magic trick as well that you're going to have to see, which Steve Spill is the curator and the resident in magician. A magician in residence when we're in Santa Monica, in his car on the way to dinner, or to lunch over here real quick. But tell me about, you say you were in, hello, Steve.
Yes, oh, yes, I'm here, I'm driving, and yes. But you see, I'm not holding the phone, I'm not holding the mic so I can talk to you.
Yes, you can.
We're just crossing 3rd Street here. Santa Monica, there's a lot of foot traffic, but to save time today, I'm driving somewhere would be walkable. We're going to go over to Lowe's Hotel, which is between my house and the Magicopolis Theater. I stop here all the time because I use their gym. They have about 50 people that are a member of Lowe's Hotel's gym. It's non-advertised. What's great about it is they maintain the great pool and jacuzzi and steam room and exercise equipment for the guests, but none of the guests go. And there's about 50 people, myself included, that are a member of the gym, and we go there, and actually there's about 10 people. Anytime I go there, the gym is empty,
yeah,
the steam room's empty, and so on. And there's maybe about 5 to 10 people that go all the time, and they're all people that live around here that are friends of mine that I will hang out in the jacuzzi, and the one guy owns a restaurant, another guy raises money for movies, a different guy is a contractor, you know. Well, and we have our war stories.
Tell me, you mentioned war stories, you talk about storage wars,
yeah.
And you said
there
was storage wars with magicians. Tell me about what was going on with this.
A few days ago, I filmed an episode of Storage Wars. For those that don't know, I don't watch TV really. It's an A&E show, it's been on 10 years or so, that people bid on storage lockers where the owner of the locker or the people that are storing their stuff there didn't pay the bill. And every once in a while, like maybe every 3 to 5 years, someone finds some magic stuff. So they, I'm their magic guy, and they came out to Magicopolis, so they have a nice ambiance for the episode. And the people shows are their stuff, and I tell them what it's worth and what it is. And I'm sworn to secrecy at the moment, but you'll see the episode. I will tell you there were 3 items. Two of them were worthless. One of them was worth about $1,200.
Well, this will be broadcast probably for several weeks. I don't know when this is going to be aired, do you know?
I haven't any idea.
Oh, okay.
I did also, a few weeks back, a show that's on after Saturday Night Live called First Look. It's a show, if you're an old-timer like me, you remember how George Plimpton used to do a bunch of different jobs.
Yeah, he was like, exactly. He was a writer, and then he'd write about it, but he'd play for the football team or whatever.
Yeah, well, the host of this show, which is on Saturday nights on NBC after Saturday Night Live, is a girl that was formerly one of the Pussycat Dolls, and she does all different jobs.
From the band, right.
So the there was a Halloween episode, so it won't be on until Halloween, but, you know, who knows, maybe this will play forever. And she co-starred in the magic show with me, and it was filmed, and I'm sure they'll boil it down to, you know, 8 minutes or something. And but we made her disappear. I floated her, I squished her, I cut her in half, all
they
that kind of
Magicopolis
stuff.
They were at Magicopolis on the stage, your place.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then we did it during one of our normal shows. We had the very short rehearsal time. Only one of our understudies, since Bozina, my normal co-star, was out of town, trained her. We trained her to do the whole show in about 6 hours. The show's about 2 hours long, and it went really great. And hopefully they'll get some good... Someone was in the audience that day, they fainted. They're going to pick them up now and take them to the hospital.
Couldn't believe it.
Yeah, they broke out
in
cold sweat. Yeah, they were shocked. To our right here, you can't really see. This is Palisades Park. It's a cliff overlooking the ocean.
And a Palisades Park. This is the place.
That's it? Yeah, no, actually, that's an East Coast. That was a George Barris song. That's an amusement park. This is, and you can see the popular Hulu bikes. I know in the East Coast, they have the Citibank bikes in New York City. It's very popular.
We have bikes also in Houston that you can rent as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every couple blocks, there's the Hulu is the sponsor on here. Who's the sponsor in Houston?
Oh, I want to say it was an airline company, I believe.
Gotcha.
I don't remember.
I guess it's good advertising, you know. Even though we're going a really short distance, it'll still be quicker driving. I know you see the traffic. Santa Monica's sort of busy 24/7, 365 days a year. It's a little bit of a resort town. It's 4 miles by 4 miles, so it's not too big. And but there's a lot of a lot of people come to the beach. They just added the train extension, so you could take the train. You could take the train from Hollywood if you wanted to, but it'd take a long time.
And your Magicopolis is only
Yeah, that's kind of another little.
It's really a touristy, a packed with tourist area. So you're really in a good location, just a couple blocks away from the beach right here. And
yeah.
So you have a lot of foot traffic, people coming in to see the show.
You know, most
advance registration.
Most people buy their tickets in advance. We do have. Maybe 8 or 9% of the people that on the spur of the moment see a crowd in front of the theater and might buy a ticket. But most of the people, they come, some of them are from out of town, so a lot of them are tourists. We do in the daytime a lot of senior bus groups. We have a lot of kids' parties that bring their parents and stuff. We have a lot of companies that are not large enough to do their own corporate event, but they might have, I mentioned to Hulu, we had the Hulu IT department last Friday. There was maybe 15 people, but they came to the show, and they came early. They saw some tricks at the bar and had a few drinks, and then they come to the magic show.
And you do the bar magic also?
You know, I float around everywhere. Chad Nelson is the bar magician. We also have a guy, Michael Wild, that does the Magic Store.
But he's a demonstrator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I, before the show and even intermission and after the show, pop back behind the bar and do some tricks or behind the Magic Store. I look at this, you know, I'm not in my dressing room with the fruit tray and the, you know, and the vodka tonic.
Yeah.
I'm actually floating all over the place. I look at myself a little bit like the host, like you've come to my house. And on top of that, whoops, what is that there? On top of that, I feel it's a little bit Wizard of Oz-ish because we sort of... oh, sorry about that. It's a little Wizard of Oz-ish. You see the guy in the lobby, and then he's, you know, helping with the seating, and then all of a sudden the show starts, and it's the same guy that comes out, you know.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So it has a little bit of...
Because they don't expect you to be the wizard.
Well, a lot of them do. I mean, okay. But not everyone, yeah. But, yeah, it has a little bit of a Wizard of Oz kind of thing to it. I'm going to have you guys get out here because I can see that my parking spot's going to be really tight today.
Okay, I'm going to pause this.
Okay.
All right, so now we're out of the car. We're heading to the elevator and on up. Now, this is actually a hotel. Is it a hotel spa or what?
Yeah, it's Lowe's Hotel. There's a big chain of Lowe's Hotels. This one is... excuse me, young man. How are you doing?
Sorry, good? Awesome. Good to see you. Good to see you, too.
Likewise, yeah.
How are you doing?
Good. Well, you know, I mean, if you're interested, I'd show you the gym and everything, but, you know, if not, we'll just go out there and get some lunch.
Nope, hold on, I got a phone call here.
Oh, okay.
Well, sorry, I had to take a phone call there. I had an agent who was calling about the show, from Chicago. But, well, anyhow, so now we're kind of overlooking the beach, heading by the pool and all the sunbathers, going over here to lunch and to sit, and overlooking volleyball court, and my gosh, this is exquisite. Exquisite.
Oh, that's good.
Nice view.
Yeah, it's great. It's a really good place. Like I said, this place is right between my house and the theater, so I stop by all the time. I use the gym, the pool, the jacuzzi, the steam
and
room.
That's the pier? You say Palisades?
The Palisades was the cliffs that we passed that are overlooking the ocean.
And then what is...
That's the Santa Monica Pier. It's kind of an old school pier, restored. If you ever see the movie The Sting, they filmed in the merry-go-round there, and they have updated a little bit. This Ferris wheel and everything is solar now, and it's the beach, as you could see, and it's kind of a calm day. The rest of the city now is maybe 80 to 100 degrees. It never gets much over 75 around here.
No wonder you're out here.
Yeah. I try not to get east of Lincoln. That's like one of the main streets I'm on. Even 1 mile from the ocean, it starts getting hotter and smogger. Yeah. There's just a constant breeze off the ocean.
Keeps the smog away.
Other ocean cities that I've been in have humidity. It's very low humidity. And the weather is just like I say, it's 20, 30 degrees hotter, just a couple miles inland, you know.
All right, well, I'm going to turn this off and... refer people to go to the blog to actually look at the video to see the tour that Steve had given us, and so that way they can see that later when you hear this podcast. So thank you very much, Steve, and we're going to enjoy lunch. Kind of sit down, shut this down for a while. Thanks again.
Thank you. I hope my bald spot wasn't showing.
Well, here we are on Thursday, Magic and Martini Night, and that we went to Frank and Musso's, which I understand is supposed to be the best place for martinis, and Ruben is the mixologist who's been here for... And how long, Ruben, have you been here?
50 years.
50 years. Wow, I know people who are 50 years old. Well, and how long has this been here?
Frank and Musso's.
We opened in 1990.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
98?
Yeah, okay. 98, yeah. Are they going to be having a big 100-year celebration in a couple of years, I guess?
Yeah, in a couple of years.
So I understand since this is a Hollywood tradition, there are, I assume, celebrities are coming from time to time?
Oh, yeah, true.
Such as?
No, you know, not right now. Like before, we used to have Steve McQueen, Gore Vidal, Chad Bukowski, Raymond Burr.
Huh. Yeah, some of the old school.
The old school.
Yeah.
Now the young ones, I don't know where they go.
Like Jack Nicholson? Anybody come in like
that? Yeah, I saw him a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now you said you had Steve McQueen. Somebody said that you threw him out of here once.
Yeah. Yeah, he got drunk and started yelling to everybody. Eat yourself, son of a bitch. Out.
Yeah. So you were the bouncer. You told him to get out.
Well, I was kind of.
Yeah. You must have been younger because he died like Quinn in 1980. There you go. Yeah. A way back.
No, when I saw it was in 1970. No, he died.
In 1980, he died, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he died earlier.
You think?
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I served him in 70, 71.
Right.
He must die about. Because when I saw him the last time, he was already sick.
Was that right?
Like in 72, 74.
Now, why is this particularly this known for being famous for martinis?
I don't know.
Well, you're the mixologist.
I think it's the environment.
What's that? You can't go
white? The environment. Because I made martinis at my house. Here they taste very.
Oh, the environment. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it does have that kind of an old Hollywood feel kind of a thing to it. You know?
Yeah.
Is that the most popular drink, or is there a special Frank and Musso's drink or something?
The most popular drink.
The martini is.
Yeah, 90% is martinis.
Now, I prefer vodka, and this is, I guess, Kettle One is what you use as a house, or?
No, no. Gin is a tradition, but popular is vodka.
Most popular is vodka. What is the gin that you typically use as the house gin?
Gilby's.
Gilby's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And you don't put anything else with it, so they're dry? I like that. So there's no...
I put a little vermouth and I throw them away the ice. So a little vermouth stays in the glass.
Oh, I see. So when you shake it up, it's already in there with the ice. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I noticed that you weren't shaking, but you were stirring it.
We stir it. We don't shake anything here.
Yeah, because James Bond says shake and not stir, but you prefer the stir.
He never drinks martinis. He yesterday drank Crown Royal Rocks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Crown Royal and the Rocks. Yeah. I like that. I have Crown Royal, but I have...
I served to a Peter O'Toole, maybe, what, 4 or 5 years ago. He was with his son. He's a good drinker. A lot of margaritas. Yeah. He told me one thing. He says in 1952 he came to Hollywood looking for a job. He cannot find a job. So he says, I came here, but the only thing I can afford was cheese omelette. Now I got money, but I cannot eat anything. Well, he can drink.
Yeah. Mm. Well, what is the special, is it steak? What is the, on the menu? What's the, is that what's best known?
Steaks.
Like a Delmonico, or what kind of a steak? Just a ribeye, or what are they?
Ribeye, filet, mm-hmm. New York.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite? What do you eat?
I don't mean meat.
Really?
You go over to Pink's and have a hot dog, or what?
I've been there.
Yeah.
And there he goes. So, walking away. So, the reluctant bartender. Usually bartenders are more talkative, aren't they, Martin?
Yeah, when he's opening up, when he's slowly opening up.
A little bit, I think.
After the card trick, that opens people up.
Yeah, it does. We're doing a card trick here. We started, and that was... That's right. And we got Walt Turner here, too, with us. And some of you might remember, if you want to go back and do a search for a Walt Turner, that Walt's my best friend since kindergarten, and he has flown down here from, I keep saying Sacramento, but it's Oakland, where you'd come from over here.
Right.
So he'd come to join us and watch us at the castle. Okay, here, Ruben, yeah.
I don't need meat.
What?
You don't need meat.
I don't need meat.
You don't? Oh, you're a vegetarian.
No.
You just don't need anything.
I got a heart transplant 2 years ago. So they stopped I cannot drink, I cannot take coffee, I cannot eat meat. So right now I am a rabbit.
A rabbit.
Zucchini, carrots, and everything.
Lettuce, yeah.
Not a good thing anymore.
Well, you look healthy.
I am not.
You're not, though.
and just an illusion.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
You're hanging in there, though.
I got a game. Yeah.
Sue, would you say, have you ever been starstruck? Has there ever been somebody who's come in you're going to say, wow, I think they was you were just excited to see a celebrity? Anybody, one of your favorites?
Stars?
Yeah. Another star that you just,
you
favorite?
Know, that was my problem, because when I started here, we got a lot of stars and I didn't care about it. Mm-hmm. I used to have some Peckinpah and I didn't care.
Yeah.
Some days
it was just a job.
No, in those days we got a lot of movie stars.
Uh-huh.
I knew guys who they were nobody, and now they win Academy Award. I knew Quentin Tarantino in the 80s when he was nobody.
Yeah.
Oh, several guys.
Well, after the speaking of the Academy Awards, after they are finished, do they ever come down here for parties? No.
Never.
I guess they have other parties they're going to. I just
They used to do it in downtown, and now they do it here in the Highland.
At the Dolby Theater?
No. Highland here.
Oh, yes, okay, yeah.
But I think they got a good restaurant, so they don't come here. Matter of fact, it's one of the worst days of the year here.
Oh, it is. Very slow. I would think just the opposite.
Because all these people work in the movie industry.
Interesting. Slowest day of the year is the Academy Awards night. Because everyone, I guess, is doing other parties or whatever, you know, going around over there. So anything else ever really exciting happen here? No, not really. It's just a restaurant. It just happens to... Yeah. Well, this is good, I have to say. It's a very good martini. You shake a good one. Yeah. Thank you very much, Ruben.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Ruben,
cheers
to you.
That's right. Cheers, mate. And so there he goes again.
Yeah, he really sent a story about the Rat Pack, didn't he?
Oh, that's right.
When
we first sat down, I said, because we're hearing in the background Frank Sinatra playing, and I was asking him about that. I said, so did the Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack ever come in? And Martin, he said,
yeah, they never sat at the bar. Which is a great story.
It's a great story.
That's a great story.
I can remember.
Tell my kids.
And here we're sitting at the bar right now, actually.
That's why we're unpopular with him, sitting at the bar.
We should have been, yeah.
We should have got a booth.
Maybe they charge more at the tables than they do at the bar.
Yeah.
You know, maybe so
that's what it is.
And they're bigger tippers over there than they are here at the bar. I don't. So, Walter, thanks for coming down all the way from Oakland, again, over here, and hope you enjoy the Magic Castle.
Looking forward to it, Scott. Thanks again.
You're welcome. And we'll probably be hearing your voice and chuckling in the background from time to time while we record a few more podcasts over the next few days. So that's all from... Frank and Musso's here on Hollywood Boulevard with Martin Cox and Walter Turner. This is Scotty out. Okay, here we go. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm still at Frank and Musso's, and I've got Sonny.
Yeah, with Sonny an O. With an O.
There
That's
you go.
Right.
Sounds good. And so you've been working here for how many years?
17.
17 years. And you like it? I mean, what makes this an institution? What is it about this?
Kidding me? This has a literary lineage.
Yeah.
You know, it's got a Raymond Chandler vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wrote The Big Sleep in here. It's got F. Scott Fitzgerald. You're sitting in his seat.
Am I?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's not going to come in today.
He's not going to bother me. Just his spirit, maybe.
Yeah.
Which is what did he drink?
I don't know. I didn't serve him. You know,
been there that long.
A man, Ruben, there. Ruben.
I talked
cool.
to Ruben a little bit.
Ruben threw Steve McQueen out.
He told me that.
Tell you that.
He said he got a little bit drunk. And he said, you got to go.
I think he knocked down about 12 Lowenbrows in about 10 minutes.
Wow. He must have had a hard day.
Yeah. Well, you know. So, yeah, we like that. We like the fact that you have your Frank Sinatra booth here.
What?
That's
the Frank Sinatra booth?
Yeah, right here where, you know, Angie Dickinson and Shirley MacLaine. You could just, hey, Frank, go home. And then over here, you know, the Rolling Stones,
yeah,
Ronnie Woods, that's
yeah.
their table. They call a week in advance. They were here November 15th, 13th, 14th, and 15th for that Desert Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their booth. They stay 3 or 4 hours in a row.
They drink a little bit.
Oh, yeah, they're serious.
They just say bring the bottle and leave it, huh?
No, they're good guys, man. They're really nice people.
Yeah,
Mick's really nice.
They're really
Mick.
Nice people, yeah. And I think Richard drinks gin, Campari, and Tall with soda water. And then that's the Mary Pickford booth where RCA was formed. Huh. And then this booth over here was Raymond Chandler. Raymond Burr, yeah. Ironside, yeah.
And Perry Mason, as we know.
Yeah, him. So this,
we're older
this has
than
a
you.
Literary, you know, has a literary history and it has a film history. It's an event restaurant.
What do you mean by an event?
Well, whenever there's an event, like at the Hollywood Bowl, part of the event is coming to Musso and Frank's for dinner. People come in, have a really beautiful dinner, a couple of martinis, and then they walk up to the Hollywood Bowl. Like this weekend, we have a tribute to David Bowie, right? So that's going to be great. Sal George.
Yep.
And A Life Aquatic. They're doing a tribute to David Bowie.
We were just at in Santa Monica this afternoon at Magicopolis, and David Bowie had been there and signed the wall over there, so it's kind of neat to see his signature.
Huh? Well, how do you think? What do you think of these chandeliers? They're from 1919.
Oh, they are, really? Yeah. From the, so this is original. This room's open in 1919, though.
No, not this room. They're from the back room.
Okay.
Hmm. Yeah, those are original.
They're not movie props. They were actually, okay.
Yeah, we love that. Them and the coat racks.
And the coat racks?
Yeah.
This like place that right has, there behind you and all?
You know, like around 10 o'clock at night, this place gets kind of haunted, you know?
Tell me.
Yeah, it's kind of like drifty, haunted. See how tall the ceiling is?
Yeah.
When you walk in the kitchen, it's like The Shining. Because, you know, it's late and it's echoing and you hear noises back. It's fucking, it's awesome.
Now, you see, that's what one of the things on my podcast, that we talk about seances. And you know, we're staying at the Nirvana, which is the guy that Grauman, that opened the Chinese Theater, and also was the architect and had built that one. And there are a lot of stories about hauntings and ghosts who live in there. So you think there are spirits here at Franklin's?
Yeah,
definitely?
I believe that.
Have you seen or heard or stories?
No, I don't get into all that, but I just believe that the spirit of the people, you know.
Oh, sure, and I understand. I agree with that.
That lingers on here.
Sure. Don't,
you know,
you can feel that.
Yeah, you can too, right?
Yeah, I can, just walking in the door.
Yeah,
you know? I mean,
it's awesome.
I mean, Frank Sinatra was the man, the Rat Pack, and all those guys, you know, and I've just...
Hey, you mind if I mention that it's Ray Davies' birthday from the Kinks?
One of the
greatest songwriters ever.
Yeah, wow.
You mind if I mention that?
No, I don't mind that.
Happy birthday, Ray.
Has he ever been in here?
We used to hang in the Troubadour together.
Did you?
Yeah, on the west side of L.A., yeah. Uh-huh. Wow. This is the West Side, so welcome to the West Side, guys.
Yeah, Layla. Or is it not? Lola.
Yeah. Well, they
L-O-L-A, Lola. Yeah, right.
He wrote songs for the underdogs, for people that didn't fit into society. So, you know, and he understood them, you know?
Yeah.
That's a big thing. He has empathy for people. The world needs more empathy for people that aren't perfect.
Good point. Good
you know
point.
What I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. I feel you.
Just anywhere. Moose Home Franks, every place needs that.
Rafi was saying also, you got a lot of people, you know, like the other night, you know, Jack Nicholson, different people who come in here as well. So.
Yeah, Nicholson's out of his mind. You know that monologue he did in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Yeah.
The baseball monologue?
Yeah.
I did a monologue for him on Harry Dean Stanton's 90th birthday about 6 months ago.
Really?
Freaking loved it.
Yeah.
Did my boxing monologue. I'm not going to do it now, but you'll know it if it happens.
Okay. Well, Sonny, thank you very much.
Right,
I appreciate it a lot.
Man.
It's a pleasure.
You guys, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you very much.
Sonny. Welcome
to the Magic
West
Word Podcast.
Sonny.
Right? Sonny. Frank and Moses, Scotty
time,
out. Okay, hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast. We're still at Frank and Musso's. And
Musso and Frank.
Musso and Frank.
And
I got
this is Bobby Caravella.
And Bobby Caravella.
AGM. this is the original room. This room was, we opened in 1919. And if you walked into this room in 1919, everything would be exactly the same, except that small neon sign at the end of the room, which was open when we opened the new room, which is in 1955. We still call it the new room. Everything here in this room is original. The grill in the middle of the room, all the steak, all the fish come off of that. All the murals on the wall, and people say, Bobby, why don't you clean off the murals? And we say, because it's Clark Gable cigarette smoke, you idiot. That's why. And if you'll notice, we don't have any pictures of celebrities up here because everybody is treated the exact same way.
Yeah.
You would be treated exactly as any movie star that came in, and any movie star would be subject to the exact same treatment we would give you. Be good or be bad is what we call it. You know, I mean, be good or be gone.
Be gone,
actually.
Yeah. Like Steve McQueen was.
Right. Exactly. Did you hear the Steve McQueen story?
Yeah.
I'll tell you better.
Okay.
Now you met Ruben.
We did.
Right. Okay. Right. Well, Ruben doesn't like to tell the story half as well.
He didn't
as I
seem
do.
To.
Right? No.
Okay.
Well, he doesn't. You know, he doesn't. He thinks it's a failure throwing somebody out. You know,
yeah.
He overserved them. Right.
Uh-huh.
So Steve is in here with Ollie McGraw.
Yeah.
And usually Steve's sat where that gentleman is sitting right now. And he always said it so he could see his motorcycle. And it was really so everybody could see him walking in. So he's at the bar and he's drinking Löwenbräu and he gets himself good and drunk. And he's with Ellie McGraw, who is a beautiful woman.
She was in Love Story.
Absolutely. So he
and
comes
also
up,
in Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. Wasn't that
that's Captain Ross.
Captain
no,
Ross.
He was,
okay, right,
she
right.
was in the getaway with,
that's right.
with Steve
that's
McQueen.
Yeah.
So Ruben comes out from behind the bar. And, you know, Ruben's my height, but at one time he was 100 pounds heavier than me. And he comes, so he's formidable. And he comes out and he says, "You have to go." So Steve grabs Ellie McGraw by the wrist and says, "Come on, let's go." And Ruben steps in between. He says, "No, just you. You have to go." Now, see, here's where it changes. Because if it was me, I'd have stolen a car and driven Ellie McGraw home. Right? Ruben,
that's a good.
Ruben got a cab and put Ellie McGraw in the cab and sent her home. Now, the next day, Steve comes in and he's talking to Mrs. Carissimi, who was our owner-operator at the time, second generation. And, you know, "Mrs. Carissimi, I'm really sorry, you know me." And she says, "You don't have to talk to me, you have to talk to Ruben." So he goes over into the bar, "Hey, Ruben, you know, buddy." He says, "Yeah, I know. You come back on Friday, I'll let you know when you can come back in or not."
Wow.
Because yeah. We treat everybody the same.
Yeah.
Everybody the same. See, we don't have one picture up.
Yeah.
And because we're not some dry cleaner trying to impress you with who comes here.
No.
We actually like to keep our guests anonymous. Everybody. Everybody, because they don't want to be bothered, and sometimes they're here with somebody they shouldn't be here with.
Well, we work at the Magic Castle. It's the same thing. We're not supposed to use the celebrities to come up on stage. I mean, they're there to be entertained themselves, because they entertain the rest of us all the time. They go there to be entertained, so, you know, we shouldn't select them as our assistants. I talked to Milt last night and had a drink with him. He's doing very well.
He comes in all the time.
Yeah.
Actually, we'd prefer if he didn't, you know, come in anymore. And he comes in with, what's his name?
Dale Hyman?
You know? The guy's annoying, if nothing else. You know what he calls me? He calls me horrible things. Tell him, ask
Dale
him if
does?
He, Dale does. And ask Dale, when you see Dale next time, yeah. Says, "Bobby from Musso and Frank, ask if you need any more napkins, okay?" Guy uses 15 napkins in a meal. Yeah, he's like, you know, claustrophobic or something, I don't know. This is a true thing.
You
ask him.
Yeah. You ask him. Hypochondriac,
you
not
like
claustrophobic.
No, is that a... No, I say a claustrophobic. He doesn't like. He doesn't like to use the same napkin twice.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Maybe he's doing the tricks. I don't know. There's a lot of doves. You know, they get here. A lot of doves flying around. But that's Charlie. That was Frank. Number three is Marilyn.
You said Charlie. Yeah, Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin. Marilyn Monroe and Joe DiMaggio. If you Google them, you'll see a picture of them sitting at that table. And I don't. Did they tell you why that was Charlie's table?
No.
Okay. So Charlie's studios, which still stand, are the Henson Studios, about a mile and a half down the road this way.
Right.
Paramount, of course, still stands about a mile and a half down the road this way. And Valentino was under contract to Paramount. So Chaplin would call Valentino, or Valentino would call Chaplin, and if they wanted to make it really interesting, they would call Doug Fairbanks Sr. and give him a 10-minute head start. They would say, "Musso's," and hang up the phone. And whoever got here last had to pay for the meal. But they rode their horses here. And they would tie them up out front, and that's the only place you could see the sidewalk from, the only seat. And everybody says, "Oh, how could you ride your horses here in Hollywood?" You look at a picture of Hollywood in 1924. More than half the roads are still dirt roads.
Yeah.
There's still orange orchards working. There's still roadside fruit stands on Hollywood Boulevard. Hollywood Boulevard was paved in 1908. So it was real easy to ride your horse here. Yeah, real easy. That tall structure at the end of the first row of booths, that's the first payphone booth installed in Hollywood, 1922. A couple of years ago, we found the original phone. We reinstalled it. Go take a look. It's great. It's a great addition. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number 20, where those two people are sitting, was Orson Welles' booth.
And Orson Welles? My uncle.
Know, and Orson, he was a good, you know, he was a fairly good magician himself.
Yep.
He made all the food disappear, for sure. So he was 500 pounds if he was
made
an ounce,
girth,
you know,
yes.
Right? So what he would do is sit in that table and push the table all the way over to where the lady is sitting so nobody could sit with him. And sit with his back to
alone.
And sit with his back to the door. And he would say, yeah, every captain would come over, "Mr. Wells, would you like a larger table?" And he would have to explain, "Look, I'm here for lunch. I don't want anybody to come over and tell me how beautiful their wife is. I don't want anybody to come over and try and sell me a script. I'm here for lunch. Leave me alone." Yeah. Go take a look at the phone, fellas. Emmanuel, how are you? You know where you're at, right? Right in the center? Did you grab me ginger ale from the bar? And there we are, and there you have it, and there it is.
So there are still people, I understand, like Jack Nicholson and others come in on regular basis.
Oh, Jack Nicholson came, was our last guest on Father's Day.
And he sits at the booth at the end, you say, down there?
The very end, yeah. And that started out as, first it was the writer's table. And the reason why it was the writer's table is because since that phone booth was there, even though the writers were writing for movies, and then radio, and then television, they would still have to write for periodicals, newspapers, and stuff.
Sure. Okay.
So they had to be near their editor.
Ah, okay.
And so they would, be down there. Then it turned into Mickey Rooney's table. Mickey Rooney apparently was the worst tipper on earth. Bill was $100, tip was $5. Bill was $500, tip was $5. And now it's Jack's table. And he comes in, sits down. He'll call up. See, thank you, sir. See if it's available. Come in the back door, sit down, eat, walk out, pace with his house account. We have quite a few people of note on our house accounts. Number 8 house account was issued to Jack Warner of the Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers, wow. Okay. Now, around the corner was where you took the picture of me, was Frank Sinatra's table.
Frank Sinatra.
Did he come here with Dean Martin and the other guys?
Dean was not a late night guy as much as people would want him to think. And he would also go to his place because Dean was also very thrifty. And so he would go to his restaurant on Sunset Strip called Dino's. Who sat with Frank is Jilly Rizzo, who was a small-time New York mobster.
Okay, and I've heard of Jilly's, because Jilly's had a place, too, in New York, is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
And the guy was a wannabe, a hang-on, you know. But if you Google Frank Sinatra and Lauren Bacall, you'll see a picture of them sitting over here. This wall was all windows at one time. Mm-hmm. Now, in 1971, we had the Sylmar quake, and they said, you have to brick it up. But when we did have tables in there were tables with red checkered tablecloths. And you'll see a picture of him and
like an Italian kind of a thing, okay. Well, that's kind of interesting. So. Mm-hmm. All right. And what?
Oh, no, we're featured in, our staff is featured in Los Angeles Magazine. On the last page of Los Angeles Magazine, there's a number of pictures of different people on the staff.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And people come in all the time, you know, they want to meet this guy, they want to meet that guy because they've heard stories. They always ask Ruben about the Steve McQueen story.
Yeah.
He says that. He actually just, you know, Ruben kept a bat behind the bar. Because at one time, you know, Hollywood Boulevard was not as
dodgy.
Yeah, more than a little. And so it was about 25, 30 years old, and one of our younger waiters saw it back there, and he's like, what's that? And, oh, I bought the bar, you know, I mean, you know. Did you ever use it? A few times, you know. And so the waiter bought the bat from him, you know, just to have that piece of piece of history. Well, here's something that we've come across in the last couple of weeks. Think about what you just paid for lunch.
This is the
drink menu
from 1951.
Thank you.
And prices have changed a little bit. So we just had a martini. And let's see, where do I see martinis here? Do you see them, Walt?
A dry martini, 50 cents.
50 cents. And what we paid is like $17, I think.
We didn't pay $17.
$15 or something for a martini. No, it was 50 cents. That's not $50. Those are all in pennies. Yeah, here's a Chablis. You can have a bottle for $2. A Cabernet for $2. Let's see, what else you got over here? A daiquiri, 60 cents. Sazerac, 65. That's one of my favorites, Sazerac. That is crazy. Wow. That's amazing. And so they must have just come across that, he said, so that's why they got that displayed over there. That's pretty wild. Well, this has been a fabulous trip down memory lane over here and kind of seeing an old town Hollywood and type of an establishment. We've kind of been seeking these out a little bit while we've been here for a few days then as well. So
that's exactly where you were.
This has been very cool. So, Bobby, thank you very much.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Hope to come back in.
Ask Dale about the napkins.
I will. And you really do. He does mix a good martini. Ruben
does, yeah.
That's
say hello to Indolfo. He might have a story or two.
Let me ask him about that. Okay. Get started. Okay, so now I've got Indolfo with me, and you are the grill master, is that right? Or what are you?
That's what they say.
Yeah. We're sitting here by the grill, and it looks like you've got a steak going on the grill right now.
Yeah, it's a big filet mignon.
And how long have you been here?
33 years.
33? You've probably seen the people come and go.
Yeah.
Anybody who prefers their meat
one way special? Maybe any celebrities that you cook for that some stories that are interesting?
Well, the, you know, the Rolling Stone, the Madonna, and a few other.
Yeah. Do they like the food a certain way, or the, some of them are like vegans, or they went vegetarian instead?
No. The people come over here, almost everybody like meat.
Yeah. That's what you're really known for, is meat.
Yeah, for the meat, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you have salmon and other kind of seafood as well?
Salmon, swordfish, trout, and inside is a sand dog.
Well, it looks really good, and on a hot day, this is probably not the place to be.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm used to now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you, Adolfo, very much. Very impressive.
Okay.
Thank you. So from Moose on Franks, this is Scotty out.
Well, this week I want to thank Steve Spill and also those guys over at Moose on Franks. That is Ruben, Sonny, and Bobby. Let me just also point out right here that I am in no way receiving any compensation, nor advertising dollars, nor even a free martini from the guys. I mean, it looks like I, and sounds like that I spent a lot of time with these guys, and I did. That's because I thought it was interesting, and their stories are fascinating, and this, again, was old Hollywood. And so I just enjoy kind of giving you a little bit of the background, the color of Hollywood outside of the Magic Castle. So it's not necessarily all magic, but something that is the magic of Hollywood. And this really is the old-time place. So it's really kind of cool. I enjoyed going over there. And again, I got $0 or any kind of compensation whatsoever. You'd think after this comes out, they would say, hey, come back and we'll at least comp you a martini or something, you know. But which, by the way, they were awesome. I have to, I mean, I've said that during the podcast, but Ruben does make a good one. And he kind of tipped the idea on how to make the perfect one. Of course, he says that most people drink gin. I prefer vodka, but that is of, I guess, rinsing the ice cubes in dry vermouth, and then he stirs it rather than shaking it. A couple different things than from what I do. I just actually spritz a little bit of vermouth on top of the martini after I've already shaken it up, and so it has a thin film of ice after you've shaken it long enough. And the key, I think, is to shake it up a lot. That's probably more information you want to know about making martinis. So again, I want to thank all those guys for being with us this week here on The Magic Word. So now it's time to talk a little bit about some of the products that are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies that you can purchase through your favorite magic dealer, which hopefully will be the magicwordpodcast.com. You can go over to our magic store and pick up something there. So let's get into something new. First up is going to be Move Zero, Volume 1. Now, this is number one of three different volumes, DVDs, each about 2 hours long, that features John Bannon. There is so much to say about this, just as far as the production and quality and what the movie, the DVD is all about and everything. And I said movie, it was kind of a slip of the tongue because it was so well produced and so cool that it is just very well produced, very well made. I felt like I was kind of watching a movie from the standpoint that, again, the high definition quality was great. The audio was good. You know, many times whenever I'm listening to a, or watching a video and listening to it, that they tend to have the music up in the background way too loud. It kind of is about on the same level as whenever they're speaking. And here, when there is music used, it's at the right moments, which would be in between the effects or the explanations or whatever. And also, whenever that they do use music, when there is action going on and people are talking, it is in the background and low, so it's really not distracting at all. So the audio speech is not having to compete with the music. The music should complement the audio speech and not vice versa, because you want to hear what the person is going to be saying. So anyhow, this was very well made. They went to different locations. I believe that in this first volume, they went over to someone's house and they were in different rooms. It went to a brewery and a couple other places. But anyhow, the way they were showing it from the outside scenes and the inside scenes, I felt like I was in a movie. The changes that they had made from black and white to color, and when they were having cutaways or whatever, it was seamless. It was perfect. It was not like just one camera or two camera shot and kind of editing the two together. It was, Big Blind Media, who produced this, did a fabulous job, and I have to give them full credits for producing an outstanding DVD. I just was very impressed with that. So that's one thing as far as the quality of the video. Highly recommend all Big Blind Media type stuff. I mean, they really do a great job. The lighting, the sound, the cameras, the editing, everything is all perfect. Now, to the important part, that is as to the material that's in there. Now, John Bannon... You know, I'm fortunate I live in Houston, so I get to see Gary Plants. And John reminds me of Gary Plants, kind of a quiet guy who is not working on a full-time professional basis at all, consider themselves as being amateurs, but they have contributed so much to our art and are just wonderful magicians and finger flickers in their own right. And I guess you'd call them really underground guys, you know, that you don't hear a lot because they're not the ones who are out there making a name for themselves necessarily in a big way, but they're making a name for themselves in a quiet way, I guess I could say. In this particular case, John's been around for a while, and the DVD that he has produced here called Move Zero is, the title says it all, that there are no slights being used or sleight of hand at all within this series. His whole idea was just try to produce something that would be almost like self-working tricks, you know, kind of reminds me, I guess, a little bit of Steve Beam's semi-automatic card tricks kind of a thing. Because I will say, like, Volume 1 was all card tricks. There are 8 effects except for one. One was an imaginary coin routine using an Equivoque type of method, but... I love it. We'll probably end up using it. In fact, I'll probably use many, if not all, of the effects that are in this. I think that the ideas that people might just kind of dismiss this, thinking, well, heck, this is just nothing important because it is a self-working type of a video. Well, yeah, sure, it's self-working, but it is a little bit different from what you might think. And in other words, the way that he gives the explanations of using something as simple, let's say, as the cross-cut force or the cut-deeper force, the explanations that he gives on each of these things really gives it more life and everything, and also how to use a different kind of subterfuge in order to obfuscate what is being done by being able to allow the volunteer to shuffle the cards at certain points, and the way that you can control top or bottom cards, and the way that you can spot these cards after they have shuffled them and everything. There are a variety of things, again, that he talks about that has to do with some of the moves he uses a lot. One, again, I mentioned the crosscut force or the X force, whatever you may call it. And another one is the J. Aussie false cut, which is essentially cutting them into thirds and then completing the cut. So it's just a false cut. And a cool little idea that he talks about on this first volume of the DVD is how that you can have the volunteer to cut this, and you can explain to them how that they can do it and not mess it up. And there are some other little subtleties, actually a lot of subtleties, and that's what really makes this great. This is nothing that anybody should have a problem doing. I would say it really is for the beginner to the professional. Certainly there are some things I said that I'm going to be using from this. I just think that they're fabulous. It shows a lot of thought. And let me also say, as far as the crediting, I don't think I've ever seen any other DVD that has gone to such extent as to crediting where each of these ideas came from. He talks also about the importance of crediting and how he goes about researching and everything. And so after everything, after every trick, there's an explanation, and then there is a series of credits of where that these ideas have come from books and discussions and whatnot. And while he's explaining the effect as well, and a description of how that explanation of it, he goes into detail also crediting people. So I've known John Bannon for a long time. He is a true gentleman and a master magician. He's one of the guys who studies regularly. David Solomon and many of the guys in Chicago get together at a round table, I think, on a regular basis and exchange ideas. And he has put together just this fabulous three DVD set. As I said, this first one has, which is Volume 1, one of Move Zero includes 8 different effects, and by me just kind of reading the titles of them will not really do it service. In between the tricks and the explanations, he does go into what he calls his trick bag and talks in detail about the cut deeper force, the cross cut force, the Aussie force or a cut, remote control, meaning that he doesn't do anything, that this is something that they do, in which it's out of your hands, which is another kind of a cool thing. So not only is it simple from the standpoint that you are not having to do any sleight of hand, many of these things, you let the spectator do all the work. They're doing the shuffling, they're doing the cutting, they're doing the counting, and then the outcome where the card is found is... It's done in just a phenomenal way, so it does come as a surprise. He has lots of little twists out of how to make these outcomes, and the climax is even a bigger surprise with some little subtle touches. Overall, again, highly recommended. The series is great, but this is just a quick review on Volume 1. All right, now let's take a look at Volume 2 of Move Zero by John Bannon. This continues again with obviously the great production value of the big blind media provides. And one thing that I do want to also point out about John Bannon himself, and that is that he's a very good teacher. And I mean that in many ways. First of all of his instructions are very clear. He doesn't speak nearly as fast as I do. He speaks very slowly. He enunciates perfectly. As being an attorney full-time, then I'm sure that he is very thoughtful in everything that he does and puts a lot of thought into what he says as well as what he does. So, again, he's a very good teacher. You can learn a lot from this. The angles from the camera, the lighting and everything is perfect as well. And given that most of these, everything in this is... zero moves, hence the name Move Zero, that it is something that is not reliant upon certain slights and having to see from different camera angles where that you might have a buckle or a break or whatever else. But what he explains in this is very thorough, and you'll get that. Second thing is that in this particular video, it's a little bit different from the first. I will say that the first one, which had 8 effects, and this has 9 different tricks that are taught, has a few more setups involved. The first one, first DVD, is really more kind of impromptu kind of a thing, and I say that improvisational, but really there are some times in which you're going to be needing to write some sticky notes or some post-it notes, and you'll put them in certain places on cards or in a card box or something on the first DVD. But aside from that, they're all pretty much out of the box that you can do fairly quickly. So they're kind of improvisational, whereas the second one, more of them will require you to take a look at the setup. You'll have to, for an example, have ace through king or something in a suit. So there's a little bit of setup. So it is a deck setup. Second of all, I do like that he goes into some more explanation of some of the principles. In particular, he talks about the Gilbreth principle, the second principle, which is kind of interesting in how that the spectator can shuffle and the cards will still end up the same. And he goes into detail explaining why and how that principle works. Pretty fascinating. He does go back and uses some of the same effects, or I should say moves, if you will, like the Balducci cut deeper force, the Aussie false cut, and so he describes those again, the Rosetta shuffle, and so he uses those again. They quickly go into detail again, so if you missed that, if you didn't get that from Volume 1, you're just buying this Volume 2, that's explained as well, so it kind of catches you up. It's a repeat of what you may have already heard in that first one. Anyhow, this is another great DVD. This one is all focused on cards, whereas the first one did have one coin effect. These are all card related. Some of them are kind of mind reading types of things, and so there's a little bit of mentalism involved, so that differs just a little bit, whereas the first one I think had one or two things that were kind of mind reading mentalism types of effects, and this one has a few more. So that's my review for the Volume 2 of Move Zero by John Bannon.
All right, now let's complete the trilogy with Volume 3 of Move Zero by John Bannon. This Volume 3 has another 9 tricks plus other kinds of explanations in between, and contains more self-working tricks in which there are zero moves, hence the name, of course. It is kind of interesting that this has just a little bit different feel from the first two. In other words, the first two, this has excellent production quality. Still Big Blind Media. But the intros and some of the graphics, I should say, I guess, are a little bit different on this third one than they are in the first and second. I don't know why they changed it up. If they're going to be changing it up, then they should have done it for all three rather than the first two being the same and then the last one. Anyhow, very minor thing, just something I noticed whenever it kicked off. It looked and felt different. But and even they used a different location for this, whereas the first two were in some of the same locations, looked like they moved to someplace else different. So it could be that they had filmed these at different times. Don't know, don't care. What's important is the quality, which is excellent, and more importantly, the content, which is beyond excellent. Let me go back again and state what I probably did earlier, and that is that, again, these are all self-working tricks. Now, an advantage of having some self-working trick. Oh, let me back up again a little bit. You know, I'd heard someone say once many years ago that there really are no self-working tricks. If there really were such things as self-working tricks, then you would go to a show. Once you got booked, you'd set them up, you'd wind them up, you would flip the switch, whatever you had to do, and then leave, come back an hour later after the show is over because they're self-working, and you just pack them up, collect your check, and leave. That's pretty much self-working. So really, there are no self-working tricks per se. However, that these things are don't take much setup. There's a little bit of preparation that's involved in many of these. Again, this has this is Volume 3 are all card tricks and really good ones, and most of them are things that can be done without much preparation. You just have to glance at a couple of cards and maybe move some cards around as, well, you're toying with the deck or actually just doing it in front of them, or just glancing at the top or the bottom card and using them as key cards. So there is something else in many of these tricks that might bother some people, and that is counting, that it seems to be process heavy. And John addresses that in part of what he talks about in the trick bag, and it's called a trick bag, that are little things, little gems throughout all these DVDs in which he goes into more detail and explaining the moves and also his reasoning, his philosophy and theory behind what he does and why he does it. But anyhow, as I said, that there are some processes in which you're saying, okay, I want you to count these cards, and it takes a little bit of time. His philosophy is on presentation, as I understand it, is that your presentation should be the same as your character. You know, that you don't have a flip or switch that you flip on and off, and you have a completely different presentation that is a different character necessarily. Anyhow, which again is one of the things he talks about on here, which he kind of intersperses throughout all the DVDs, and that is, again, some of his philosophy and some of his theory, in which he addresses some questions that have been posed by different people. So you get to know the man and his thinking behind his creative thought and how he creates. And those are not to be overlooked. I think that's very important to know where he's coming from. And although he is very good sleight of hand magician and is an excellent card worker, these things really are for the beginner. From start to finish, from the first through the third DVD, they're all excellent. I will say that in this one, again, it kind of carries on from the second one, but there are some things that he goes into detail about here that were not included in the first couple. So people might think, well, which DVD should I buy? You know, if I'm not going to buy all three, golly, you know, just dive in and buy one, two, or three. You won't be disappointed in any one that you buy. This particular one, he talks a little bit about a thing called the prophecy move, which is a kind of an impromptu method. It's an older trick in which that you have a business card that is stuck in the deck anywhere, and then when you turn it over, that it reveals the cards that are surrounding wherever that you had placed the card. So if you place a business card and you flip it over, and when it does, it says, you know, Queen of Hearts and Three of Spades, let's say. So whenever you show both cards on both sides of the business card placement, it would be the Three of spades and the three of whatever I just said. You get the idea. Anyhow, that's just one of the things. Talks also towards the end about the Einstein tautology. This was kind of cool, the trick that fooled Einstein. He has a variation on that that's called the Box of Doom, and it's a pretty cool trick. I have used that using quarters for a long number of years. It really is a fooler, in which basically that you say, I have as many items as you did. In this case, I have as many cards as you did, plus three, and when the rest of my cards are added to the total, it will be 26 or whatever the number you want to use. And he has then more variations on that that will really fool you, and it just kind of adds on, is pretty impressive. Beyond that, parity principle, a vertical addition, he has, which is the big bad add, is a trick that he has, but it uses this vertical addition principle, in which when you're adding all the numbers that you know in advance what the number's going to be, regardless of what numbers that they put down, that the two volunteers will deal off a number of cards, or you hand them some cards, they put down a card, let's say one puts down a 2, another one puts down a 3, so you have the number 23. Another person just puts down any numbered card they're holding, let's say a 6, another person puts out another number, which is a 9, and so you have 69. Anyhow, you have a number of random numbers that have been generated, and when added together, equal your total. Again, it's something that is kind of, I say kind of, it is exactly self-working. There are no moves involved. It's something that anybody can do. And for that matter, anything and everything that is in this whole series of Move Zero is something that any and everybody can do because, as it says, it's for the beginner. But as I was saying earlier, that I think if you throw in one of these types of, quote, self-working, no-move type of effects along with the rest of your sleight of hand, it fits in quite nicely. I wouldn't do a whole series of these necessarily. If you're just getting started, it's a great DVD set to buy that you can certainly put two or three of these together. But I would move on then to some sleight of hand tricks to show your expertise. Otherwise, it's just a mathematical principle, and before long, people get the general idea, hey, the deck is doing the trick, not the magician. But I think if you throw these in from time to time, that it helps add a lot to the overall look of making you appear to be a better magician, which you are, because you've learned from the best, and this guy is the best. His name is John Bannon, and I highly recommend this series. Again, it's called Move Zero, Volumes 1, 2, and 3, available from Big Blind Media. One other thing I think it's important for me to add, and that is that in the credits that John gives after each of these explanations of his tricks, he also includes the books that they come from, and in most every occasion, these have already appeared in print somewhere in one of his publications, whether it's his recent Destination Zero or Dear Mr. Fantasy or Impossibilia or in Mentalismo or High Caliber. He also will tell you which book that these had come from. So my point being is, if you are buying the DVDs thinking there is new material that he is presenting here, as I understand it, it's not. This will have appeared somewhere, but this does show you his presentation of the trick. Plus, beyond that, he does talk, as I said earlier, about his philosophy and also shows the moves and everything. And of course, it's I've always said that if a picture's worth 1,000 words, then a video is worth 1,000 pictures. And so a demonstration that he is giving you is invaluable. So I think it's important that if you have the books, that you can supplement them with the set of DVDs. So just so that you know that these are things that have appeared previously in his publications. Well, there you have it. There's an extensive review of all three DVDs from Move Zero from John Bannon that is produced by Big Blind Media and available through Murphy's Magic Supplies that you can buy from your favorite magic dealer. And as you're thinking of your favorite magic dealer, why not think of themagicwordpodcast.com? Just go and check us out there on the webpage and go to the magic store and click on that, and you will see where you can order these. Now, let me also point out that as you are going to be purchasing this, there are two different ways that you can buy the DVD. It's available both in hard DVD, in which a physical DVD will be sent to you, or a set of DVDs, or you can download this as well. The price is the same, $30, whether you're going to be receiving it as a download, but there's no shipping obviously involved there. But if you do order the DVD, you have it for your DVD collection. You can look at any time, and there will be shipping added onto that then as well. I'll also point out that if you get the download, of course, you can have access to that on your computer anytime you want then as well. So that's available. Make sure when you are ordering that through the magicwordpodcast.com, through our magic store, that you do click on the correct one that you want. That is the DVD or the download, your choice. So thank you very much for listening to this review. And if you have any questions or suggestions on some things perhaps that you might like to see or hear reviewed here, then be sure to write me, scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. So that's going to be a wrap for this episode of My Week at the Magic Castle, Part 3. I'm going to delay Part 4 until after the combined IBM and SAM convention. I'll be attending that during the week of, I believe it's the 11th through the 15th of July. And so, as usual, whenever I go to Magic Conventions, I like to update you daily with reports on what's going on, with some conversations with the organizers, the talent, the dealers, some of the registrants, and perhaps even some of the other local color we might go to wherever, just to go and check out things. But nevertheless, you get the idea. If you can't attend the convention, you can feel as if that you're there by listening to the daily updates. And if you are there, you might want to listen to them after you get back home to see or to listen to some things that you may have missed and enjoy the experience all over then again. So make sure that you have subscribed to the Magic Word Podcast, and that way that you will receive these daily updates every day, fresh, as they are delivered. I hope to have those things posted each morning by 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, which means that gives me time to do everything I need to do during the daytime and hang out at night and session with some of the guys and get back to my room and work until 2, 3, or 4 o'clock in the morning putting these things together and uploading them so that way that they can be fresh to you and you can enjoy them. See, now that's the kind of work that I do. Just because I love you guys, I appreciate you listening week to week, and also appreciate you helping to support the Magic Word Podcast. And if you do like this, yeah, float me a buck or two. Doesn't cost very much. If you could do that on a monthly basis, just go to patreon.com, and there you can find out how that you can support us financially if you have the means, and certainly we appreciate it. If not, well, I hope that you continue to enjoy this and you spread the word by telling other people, and perhaps they might be in a position which they can help. So anyhow, I think that's all for now. And again, we will suspend my Week at the Magic Castle podcast until after we get back from Louisville. And I believe there's going to be one more. And then after that, we will start broadcasting some of the regular one-on-one type of conversations that I've kind of backlogged for a while. So I've got quite a few people that are waiting in queue, so to speak, and I think you'll be interested to know some of the exciting people I've spoken to and the things they talked about while I was at the Magic Castle and elsewhere too. So until next week, when I will be reporting from Louisville, Kentucky, stay well, get booked, and see you in Louisville. This is Scotty out.